thousands of years, man has looked to the heavens with a curious eye and asked himself, what is out there? Over the last 20 years, things have changed a bit. Now there may be evidence that whatever is out there is becoming a little curious too. It all started in 1947 when a veteran pilot saw a number of disks in the sky and described them as looking like saucers skipping through the water. And the term flying saucer was coined. Since then, there have been over 11,000 reported sightings of unidentified flying objects. This possibility of visitors from outer space kindled a new type of literature. Tongue-in-cheek books about little green men and detailed scientific studies about the possibility of life on other planets. But all dealing with saucers, UFOs, and the question, is their destination Earth? Today on College Report, Sister Ann Jude, PhD and professor of chemistry at Immaculate Heart College, leads us on a tour of this literature of the UFO. I'm Bob Wright. Sister, just how did a chemistry professor become interested in unidentified flying objects?
You know, Bob, so many people ask me what I thought of unidentified flying objects or UFOs that I got tired of saying I don't know because I didn't know very much about them. So a few months ago, I was asked to do a book review study, and so I decided to look at the literature and was amazed at the number of books and the number of studies and the number of sightings that there were. So this is kind of how I became interested in this.
Well, there's certainly been much in the news in recent years. Just how long have these reports been circulating?
Well, the flying saucer age, I suppose, began in 1947 when that veteran pilot you mentioned, Kenneth Arnold, first saw nine flying saucers. However, there are accounts in history that can be interpreted as UFOs. Wilkins has a very interesting book in which he shows hieroglyphic writings of 5,500 years ago that he interprets as flying saucers. And then he shows accounts of every century since then that can be interpreted as accounts of UFOs.
What are some of the current writings on UFOs?
Well, there are, in fact, that's one of the reasons that I became interested in them. There are at least three regular publications which show you sightings and newspaper articles and so on, one by the NICAP group, the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, and two others. These are monthly and bi-monthly publications which tell very much about the sightings. Since January, the sightings have averaged about 100 a week, which is a very large number of sightings.
Mm-hmm. What about the Air Force? Does it put out any literature on the subject?
The Air Force puts out reviews occasionally. The Air Force, of course, is the most important group, or at least the group that is responsible for our skies and defending us and so on. So since 1947, they've had a project that has been the clearinghouse and so on for all of the unidentified flying objects. They put out this Project Blue Book in which they try to show the sightings and so on. By their numbers, there have been over 11,000 detailed sightings reported to them. Now, the Air Force group claims to explain 99% of these sightings in many different ways. The NICAP group, the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, the NICAP group has shown that the Air Force has explained things. Sometimes the explanation is given even before the sighting has been clearly defined and so on.
Are you saying you think the Air Force is a little bit defensive about these things?
Yes, it would seem that maybe it would be a little bit defensive. As I mentioned, the Air Force claims that it explains 99%, where the NICAP group will say that natural phenomena can be used in explaining about 60% of them.
Now, the groups that are actually studying these reports, you mentioned the Air Force, NICAP. There's another one called, the initials are ASCA or something like that.
Yes, the Amalgamated Flying Saucers Clubs of America. Now, this is a group of people, many of whom claim to have contacted the people in outer space. And they're really a different type of group from
the NICAP. They've been taken for a ride on a saucer?
Many of them have written books and have told about the rides that they have taken and so on. It's actually a much smaller group, and it has a different purpose than NICAP. Then there's another group, the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization, or APRO, and this group also tries to study phenomena. By far, though, the one that has the most extensive files and has done the most serious work is the NICAP group.
Mm-hmm. University of Colorado is doing something along these lines, too.
The Air Force has given recently a $300,000 grant to the University of Colorado, and they were very fortunate to get a very eminent physicist, Dr. Edward Condon, to lead the project. And what the University of Colorado study is supposed to do is approach these unidentified flying object sighting reports from the point of view of a physicist, meteorologist, psychologist, and so on.
Well, with 11,000 sightings reported, some pretty weird shapes must have been described. Could you show us some of the types of UFOs?
Yes, we have a chart here that was prepared by the Air Force. What the Air Force did was take the sightings, the accounts of people who saw the unidentified flying objects, and they faked the descriptions that the people gave into a computer. And the computer came up with these nine drawings. And as you see, they're very different. Some are saucer shape or similar to saucer shape. Some look very much like a football. Some are cigar shaped. Some have other shapes. So that these seem to be the most common sightings. The common shapes.
What about speeds, velocity?
Well, you know, Bob, it's very hard to make any statement about speed because to really say how fast, say, a cigar-shaped saucer was going, you'd have to know how big it is and how far away it is. And we really, in most cases, well, in all cases, really haven't known this. So it's very hard to make any statement on speed.
Some of the witnesses claim that they think these were going at fantastic speeds.
Right, but then when a scientist will interpret or try to interpret what is meant by a fantastic speed, it's simply impossible to do so if you don't know more about the object than we know.
Well, couldn't all of these sightings, all 11,000 of them, be explained as natural phenomena in one way or another?
Many, many of them can. For example, we have so many rockets and satellites and so on, and if you're an untrained observer and you don't know that there's a rocket in your vicinity and you see one, for you it's an unidentified flying object. And until someone like NICAP or the Air Force can connect a known rocket with the position in the sky that you report your UFO, it will remain an unidentified flying object. But many of them can be explained. As I mentioned, that NICAP gives 60%, the Air Force, gives 99%, can be explained as rockets, missiles, flocks of birds. Flocks of birds can even be picked up on radar. You know, many of these UFOs are picked up on radar. The Air Force has sent planes out to investigate radar spots on radars and so on. And also cloud formations. We have a very interesting slide to show you tonight. And this slide, you can see that this could very easily be interpreted as a flying saucer if you didn't see the edge of the cloud but only saw the center part. This is one of many unusual cloud formations, and it is possible that many of the UFOs can be identified in this way. There are other ways too. For example, Dr. Hynek at the who is the Air Force advisor, he's an astronomer, has recently given marsh gas as an example of an explanation for some UFOs. None of these explanations fit all of them. Another explanation that has been given is mirages, and we have an interesting picture here. An astronomer at Harvard, or rather two astronomers, had the idea that some could be explained this way, and so they went out into the desert until they could take this picture. Now, if you notice, this is a picture of ridges and mountains, and the far distant ridge, the weather conditions are such that the ridge is reflected above itself, so that you see the peaks being reflected, and you see these mirages or images above the mountain. Now, if you were an observer down in this little valley here, see where all the dust is, it might be that you don't see the mountain at all, that it is covered up by dust or something, and all you would see would be this reflection. Well, now, if you saw this reflection in the sky, you'd be seeing an unidentified flying object.
I see. What's your advice to those of us who think we have seen such objects?
Well, first of all, you should make a very detailed measurement. And even before that, first of all, you should never go out without a camera loaded at all times. so that you can take a picture. Now, I'm really being serious here. We need pictures of these unidentified flying objects. As I mentioned, they're being seen at a rate of 100 a week. Many of them are naturally explainable, but we need more pictures to explain the ones that we can and then to study the ones that we can't explain. So what you should do if you see one is take its picture, if you possibly can. Call witnesses, anyone who's nearby, call them. Then take accurate account of the time and try to pick an object, a stationary object like a telephone pole or a building or a tree, and then measure whether the object is north or south and how far north or south, and then make a report on it. Now, if you want, you can report it to the newspapers. I don't advise this myself because very often the newspapers will make fun of your unidentified flying object report. There have even been very sad cases of people who have lost their jobs for reporting that they have seen an unidentified flying
object. Well, what should we do if we think we saw one?
Well, you should make this detailed report and either call your nearest Air Force office or mail it to the Air Force office. You mail it to your local office, or you can mail it to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, where the National Blue Book headquarters is. Or you can contact the University of Colorado. You can write them. Or you can contact a NICAP group, which has subcommittees in most of the major cities in the United States. But for sure, you should make a report and try to get as many witnesses to sign your report as possible.
I get your point. Well, some sightings have been photographed, right?
Yes, there are many photographs of sightings. We have some here today, some very interesting ones that were provided to me by the local NICAP subcommittee. These were taken off the coast of South America by Army people on board a ship, so that it seems so likely that these pictures could be hoaxes. The first one, which we have here as a slide for you, which is a better picture, shows the unidentified flying object just coming over a hill on this island. The second one is an enlargement of the first picture, and it gives a great detail here in this picture of the unidentified flying object. There are other pictures that that are available, but these are among the most pictures that are hard to discount.
Well, I certainly will admit that those are interesting pictures, and they do look real, but anyone who's worked with photography knows that it is rather easy to fake such things.
And this is what makes it so very difficult, because there are many, many fake pictures around. NICAP so far has only announced or has given its reputation to about 8 or 9 pictures that they claim are not hoaxes and cannot be explained, like the ones that we just saw here of the South American picture. Now, we have another picture here, which is a photograph which the Flying Saucers Clubs of America distribute. Now, it's impossible, on looking at this postcard, to tell whether this is a hoax or not. Many people that I've shown it to immediately will say that it has to be a hoax. I don't know, but without the negative and so on, you simply can't tell in a picture like this. And of course, this is why I tell you to travel with your camera at all times. We need more pictures.
Right.
We have another interesting picture over here.
I've been watching that one with great interest while we've been sitting here. That is unbelievable to me.
Well, first of all, I have to tell you where it is, which makes it even more unbelievable. This is an insurance building in Hartford, Connecticut, and you see the building is completely surrounded by flying saucers. Now, you'd think if so many flying saucers invaded a big city in the United States like Hartford, you would have heard of it. Have you heard of it?
No, I haven't heard any bulletins about that.
Well, let me turn the picture upside down. And when I do this, you see, you're not seeing the building at all, you're seeing its reflection. And now when I point it out to you, you can see that the building is kind of cute, as it would be in a reflection. You know, you're seeing the water surface is not even. And what you're looking at is water on a steel girder, and the rivets are sticking up out of the water. So all of these flying saucers are the rivet and the rivet's reflection in the water. What you're seeing is the building's reflection. The only thing that's not reflection is this top corner of the photograph.
That easily has to be the photograph of the year, I would say.
Well, it certainly is a beautiful photograph. This photograph appeared in a recent issue of Look magazine, a special edition that they had on flying saucers.
What is the literature on flying saucers? Is some of it serious, or is it all sort of...
Much of it is serious. Some of it... Well, I really should say that all of it is serious to the authors, so that even the books that you and I might discount as being non-serious are serious to the people who wrote them. I think that the literature falls in many different classes. For example, there are very serious scientific studies of the possibility in life in outer space and how we will communicate with it, how we will journey to outer space someday. Our scientists already are planning what we may do in 50 years or 100 years or 500 years. Then there are some books where the premise is that these unidentified flying objects not only come from outer space, but present a threat to us. And so we have some books like this. We have many books which are accounts of sightings of unidentified flying objects. Two that are very interesting are both written by John Fuller, who is a journalist. John Fuller had an interesting idea. He thought that if you take one incident of sightings of UFOs, and you go to the place where they had been sighted, and you interview the police and the Air Force and all the people who saw them, old and young, educated, non-educated, and so on, and you spend time doing this, that you could explain all of these unidentified flying objects. Well, the incident he picked was at Exeter, New Hampshire, and his conclusion after almost a year of study and writing was, you can't explain the incident at Exeter. Well, now, while he was there, a couple contacted him to tell their story. They had gotten very ugly and adverse publicity in a Boston newspaper. They claimed to have seen a flying saucer during a night trip. And this became a great problem for them, and they consulted a psychiatrist about it. And because of the adverse publicity, the psychiatrist even has an introduction to this book. They wanted their story told the way they think it really happened. This book is a very interesting one. Perhaps of more interest to someone who's really interested in studying UFOs than that book would be many books that are available which talk about the entire subject. There are certain people that have spent years studying it, and they have published books that are very serious studies of the entire phenomena, and also try to talk not only about sightings in the United States, but sightings other places too. As I mentioned earlier, they've been seen all over the world, every continent, practically every country. In fact, I probably could say every country has seen them, and so on. And then the last books, I don't have too many examples here, are the people that are called the contactees, the people who have actually claimed to have contacted. Many of them claim to have gone to Mars and Saturn and so on. Where I started my study was at the Los Angeles Public Library. The Los Angeles City Public Library has a very excellent and extensive collection of UFO literature in a very special collection. They don't lend it. It's a collection kept there in their reference room, but it's a very complete study. And if anyone is interested in reading many of the books, they can be obtained there, although they cannot be circulated. You have to do your studying there. It's not really for someone who's going to study the subject.
What would you say has been the impact of all of these books and this discussion on our society?
Well, you know, many of the people who the group, of course, the contactee group, the group who claim to have taken trips to outer space or contacted them, and then the other people who, if they haven't actually contacted someone from outer space, wish that they would have contacted, they form a special group that I think is very easy to understand in our own civilization, because in many people's minds, their concept of God is a very materialistic God. The God to whom you pray at night that he would cause the sun to rise the next morning, the God that would cause each individual physical action to happen. Well, you know, in our present scientific and technological oriented society, this God is dead. The God that caused each physical action.
So now the
invent people from other planets.
They invent people from other planets.
We think they invent them. We're not sure, are we?
Well, in most cases, I think we are pretty sure. They invent people who come and give them very beautiful words of advice that we should stop our wars, that we should solve our economic problems. But it's interesting when you try to track down the most beautiful passages that people have said from outer space, you find that you can find almost the same passage in Shakespeare or the Bible or someplace else.
I suppose this also has its humorous side on our society.
Oh, it does have its humorous side. I have a very humorous, at least I think it's very humorous, joke here today. This shows two people from outer space just arrived, hiding behind a billboard, and then they see a truck coming, loaded with cars. And one says to the other, "Let's wait for the next one. This one's the mother."
I see what you mean.
This one illustrates our attributing to these people very human, very American qualities, you
yes.
know, our great honor for mother and so on.
Let me ask you another question. You talked about taking cameras with us, and you told me I wish you'd carry a color camera. Why?
Because we don't have any colored pictures, and we'd like some. The only colored picture that, or practically the only colored picture that I could find, and the only one I have here tonight, is this one, which has been taken. Now, you see a very indistinct color here. This may be, in fact, it probably is, some natural electrical or optical or some other disturbance, but we don't know what it is. And so if you carried your camera with you loaded at all times, and you actually saw an object that you couldn't identify, you could take its picture. And if we had more films and negatives of pictures like this, we could lead to many more conclusions.
Meanwhile, aside from the sightings that individuals have been making and occasionally photographing, what has the scientific community been doing to really find out if there is life elsewhere than here on Earth?
Well, there are many people who are studying this problem. The assumption of our scientific community is that there is life in outer space, that the universe is so very large that it's most improbable that we would be the only planet that would have life. A most interesting book was recently published by an American astronomer and a Russian astronomer, co-authors of this book. And among the projects that are on the drawing boards and some that are actually in existence that are described in this book is a Project Osmo, where 2 years ago we tried to listen to outer space to see if anyone was communicating with us. We have a slide today of a telescope that was used in this Project Osmo. Now, when you're listening to outer space, you have... when you're listening to outer space, you have the problem that you have to decide where to listen.
There's a lot of room.
Now, even more important, though, than some of these scientific studies, which are for the far, far distant future, is the need for studying these UFOs right now.
Yes, excuse me, we're about to run out of time, and I do want to ask you, is that your basic conclusion to all of this, that we should study them more?
My basic conclusion is that we really must study them more, that there are too many that we simply cannot explain. We need more groups like NICAP, which is doing a very fine job in trying to study investigations.
Like these pictures we see here?
Yes, these are the Heflin photographs, which were taken here in Southern California, and... there are three pictures like this. Heflin took these. There are many other pictures which are available, but we need more pictures. The Air Force originally said that Heflin's pictures were a hoax. He, after that, demanded that his congressman contact them, and they said that they were not a hoax. We're seeing now some of the slides that we do have that simply cannot be explained. We need more pictures like this, and we need more study. As I mentioned, these are coming in now. The reports are coming in about 100 a week. The University of Colorado is studying them. There are private groups like NICAP that are studying them. But we need more serious scientists to look at this problem.
If you were allowed to do exactly what you want to do in this field, and even go as far as you want, what would you How would you go about studying it?
Well, I'd like to see one myself. And I suppose to do this, I'd have to do... I don't know. I would want to interview as many people as possible who have seen them. People like scientists and trained pilots and people who are good observers. I would want to go and interview them.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there are groups that are doing this.
I detected from your earlier remarks when you were saying the Air Force says it explains 99%, but NICAP says only 60%. That you have some doubts yourself that all of these can be explained away as natural phenomena.
With the present time, I would say that it's a reasonable hypothesis that some of these may come from outer space, but at this time we do not have any proof for it. It is quite evident to me from the reading and study that I have done that we can't explain these and we do need to study them.
Mm-hmm.
There's not proof either way.
And as a scientist, you are waiting until more evidence is in to make a prediction.
Yes, but I'm not just waiting. I'm urging people, especially scientists like physicists and meteorologists and so on, to really do some serious study of this.
What has been the overall impact of these reports and the study of UFOs on religion? Any noticeable effect that you can observe?
No, except that some of the contactee groups have come up with some of these very far-out or kooky kind of religions. And, you know, here in Los Angeles or in Southern California, we seem to draw more of these than usual.
Even if it were someday proven that indeed some of these objects have been visitations from outer space, that would do little to affect your conception of religion and God, as it now, as you know.
No, of course, this would present many interesting theological questions and so on. Questions that it would surely be premature for me to make comments on now, but it surely would present questions. However, we do expect... when I say we here, I mean that scientists are, to expect that in our vast universe, which is so very large, that there are other civilizations which have developed like we
have.
These
could certainly be reconciled with a God of an infinite universe.
Oh, yes.
I wish I could ask you more questions, but I see time has just run out on us, so I'll say thank you very much. Sister Ann Jude's unusual hobby is just an example of the many interesting things that are a part of campus life at Immaculate Heart College. For information about Immaculate Heart and the other 10 independent colleges which participate in this television series, we've prepared this college fact sheet, which contains information about all of these member colleges.